Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. I'm Darren Hefty along with my brother Brian. We're going to be talking about seed treatments for wheat today. Yes, it's right around the corner. I know there's still some white out there, but it won't be here long. We're in March now, so it should start getting better soon, right, Brian?
Well, I thought that a long time ago that it was going to start getting better, but you know, we don't have any control over the weather. There are so many things we can control, though, like seed treatments in wheat. And I guess that's the whole thing. Every day, if you start getting down about all the things like the grain markets and the weather and the farm news and all these things that you can't control, you're in trouble. So we got to redirect the focus and let's talk about what we can do to make things better for sure on the farm. So we'll get to all that today. You know, we've been getting so many questions in the Ag PhD mailbag, though. I think we better get to some of those right away here.
It's now mailbag time with Brian and Darren.
Oh, you're going to like this one. This first question comes from Ron, and he said, what happened to IMI corn hybrids and Lightning herbicide? Seems like it was a flash in the pan, pun intended.
Well, there is really no point because Lightning was basically just Pursuit, and that's an ALS herbicide. So I want you to think about all the major weeds in corn and how many of them are ALS resistant. We got water hemp, mare's tail, common ragweed, giant ragweed. You know, there are a whole bunch of the kochia. There are a whole bunch of these weeds where, we're going to spray Lightning, but what good is that going to do? And you say, well, we can get some grass control. Well, Roundup's way cheaper and way, way better for grass control. So there was just no point. And so the thing is, the IMI corn was a natural selection. It wasn't biotech. And it just, there's no need for it anymore.
Nope, that's right, Ron. When we've got resistant weeds, there wasn't a need. And it wasn't a trait either. It was just something that they naturally selected for tolerance. So that's one of those things where nobody had any big money invested in it. So there wasn't like, oh, we invested $10 million in a trait. We need to keep trying to promote it. So anyway, yep, you're right. It was just a flash in the pan. Hey, thanks for the question, though. Get a question. This is from Randy, and he said, first of all, thanks for all you do for ag. My question is, I've got some fence lines that tend to get pretty weedy, and I use Roundup Ready corn and soybeans, but I've got a bunch of different weeds, even some woody vines that are growing in the fence line. What should I use?
Well, woody vines are going to be a real problem. That's not going to work very well. Now, in terms of broadleaf weeds, then what I would probably do anymore is if, let's say, I had Xtend soybeans and I have corn, okay, then I'm going to use dicamba in there. I'm going to use one of the new dicambas and spray in the fence line. If it's Enlist beans, or even I might try regular beans, I might be comfortable spraying that new 2,4-D called Freelix. Freelix just is not moving. It's not volatilizing like the old 2,4-D. So I'm willing to try that. In fact, we are doing a bunch of that on our farm. But when you start talking about woody species, that's where we get into problems, because then you're going to need something different. Maybe it's Remedy or Milestone, Tordon. You got to be real careful. I like Remedy in that it isn't going to have all that residual that the Milestone and Tordon are going to have, but nevertheless, it's going to be really, really hard on broadleaf crops, so you'd have to be super careful that that's not going to move. So those are some of the products that I would think about and some of the steps that I would probably take. But yeah, I know it's tough. We've dinged up our beans. We've, you know, even damaged our corn a little bit, but maybe mainly the soybeans, spraying ditches and fence lines. Well, that's why now I'm excited about these new products. The new dicamba doesn't move like the old stuff, and the new 2,4-D really doesn't move. I mean, that new 2,4-D Freelix is amazing. All right, next one here is, it comes from Joe in South Dakota, and he says, he wanted us to take a look at this website. There was a university that had put out some information about the fact that corn has a lower tolerance to python. Have you ever experienced a scenario where python has damaged corn? He says, I think back to 2012 when it was dry, and I don't recall any issues with using TripleFlex that contains Python. SureStart also contains Python. Other than it not working very well, if there's no rain, obviously. So is the potential damage happening due to an application timing issue? Or what's going on here? Okay, so Joe, our concern is with ALS herbicides. I was just talking to another farmer about a different ALS herbicide the other day, but it's the same thing. When we have ALS herbicides and we have cold, wet conditions at planting, that's where we have the risk. Now, the lower rate you use, the less risk there is. The higher rate, obviously, the more concern we have. But when we've got Python out there, so SureStart, TripleFlex, anything that contains Python or any ALS herbicide, even Varro that would be in Corvus, for example, I worry about the same thing. Cold and wet, it can stunt the crop just a little bit. Now, the question is, how much yield damage are we doing? Most of the time, we really haven't seen much for yield damage. It's possible, but we aren't seeing much. So even if it stunts that plant a little bit sometimes, it does actually turn out okay. So how do you avoid that? Well, I guess my first thought is, I like incorporating the product lightly, or I put the product on way early so it has more time to kind of get filtered down into the soil a little bit. In other words, I have diluted my concentration right at the soil surface. I like that better because now I don't have so much going into the plant all at once. And then I still usually achieve great weed control, in fact, even better, but I am not doing quite as much injury to that crop. So no, especially where you're at, and Joe's from Central South Dakota, am I really worried about Python or any ALS ever hurting corn? Gonna be pretty slim out there, Joe, because let's face it, you're warmer and you're definitely drier than most areas, so I'm not too concerned about it in your particular case. All right, well, again, today on the show, we are going to talk seed treatments in wheat. We will do that right after this. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
White mold, sudden death syndrome, root rot. If you raise soybeans, it may seem like you have all the cards stacked against you when it comes to disease. But did you know there is a new cost-effective seed treatment which can help prevent all three? Heads Up Seed Treatment offers a new proactive approach for dealing with fungal and bacterial diseases. Compatible with other seed treatments, hedge your bet against disease this spring. Ask your dealer for Heads Up today. To locate a dealer, visit headsupst.com.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, being able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at soilwarrior.com.
Give your corn a strong defense against stress throughout the season with MycoApply Endoprime SC. MycoApply Endoprime SC uses four specially selected species of mycorrhizal fungi to protect your crop against stress. That means more access to water and key micronutrients while building a healthy soil structure for stronger crops for years to come. Stronger corn starts beneath the surface. Learn more about MycoApply Endoprime SC at endoprimecorn.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here live in the Morton studio. Today on the show, we are talking seed treatments in wheat. First on the show, we've got Paul Luchin. He is with Syngenta. Hey, Paul, how you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you guys?
Excellent. All right, so seed treatments in wheat. Lots of different options out there. Where do you usually start when you're getting questions from farmers or agronomists about this?
You bet. Thanks. Tell you what, I have got quite a few questions here. Just last fall and again already this spring, because there's a lot of options out there. Guys don't know if they want to do soybeans, go to corn, or get some more wheat in this spring. But
right.
Generally what I tell everybody is we are planting seed, and it's important to get every seed started at the same time and get it up and healthy. And if we don't have some kind of seed treatment on there, what happens is a lot of that seed is left basically unprotected, and the disease or moisture that's in all our soils, depending on the time of year, can greatly affect how that plant's going to germinate and initially grow. Part of what I share with guys is I've watched a lot of different crops as I've been monitoring plots, and it doesn't matter whether it's corn, soybeans, sunflowers, wheat, peas. If that seed doesn't all germinate within a couple of days of itself and come up, if that young plant isn't able to compete with the others, what happens is it's just like we all know in corn, that a corn plant that comes up later than the other is a weed. But, you know, when we go out to plant seed, we want all that seed coming up. We want it all coming up healthy, because if we start it off healthy, it's going to be able to kind of defend against some of the diseases and pressures that it's going to be up with the rest of the season.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, you mentioned the germination thing. We have talked to a lot of farmers that are concerned about germination issues, especially this year in soybeans. But even when I think about wheat, I didn't realize this till about 20 years ago, and we actually put in a seed lab here at Ag PhD, but we took some treated seed versus the untreated seed, and the treated seed, the germination was always better. So whatever happens there, I don't know exactly, but all I know is we were improving our germination scores. So exactly to your point, we've got a better chance to get those seeds germinating and germinating quickly.
Absolutely. And that's what we noticed too. You know, there's a lot of things you can put on seed. I generally start guys out with our Cruiser Max Vibrant cereals. We've got Cruiser in there, our insecticide to keep some of those early chewing and sucking insects from destroying the seed. We've also got Apron XL. We've got Dividend. We got Vibrance. We got three different fungicides in there. And one of the things probably Syngenta's got is because of our Apron XL, or what we call our methanoxin that's in there, we usually have a higher rate than what most of the other guys are using out there. And that is the product that helps with Pythium. And generally, you know, we go out early on cereals, and we go out early when that soil is cool and usually a little bit wetter, and that's an ideal time for Pythium to set in. So we've got a good load of methanoxin in there in all of our stuff to help prevent that disease from setting in. But if a guy doesn't want the insecticide or doesn't feel he does, our next line down with just three fungicides is called Vibrance Extreme. And We get a pretty good uptake on that, again, because we've got three fungicides in there working on most of the diseases, and especially because we've got that heavy load of methanoxin in there for that Pythium.
So with the insecticide part, how do you feel that fits for a lot of farmers out there? I mean, is that usually the direction you're steering them, is to put insecticide out in their wheat or not?
Yeah, usually I do, because that wheat's put out there in the ground, and once that ground starts warming up, you've got insects underground and right at the surface that are pretty hungry, and as soon as that, you know, soil gets into that 50, 60, 70 degrees, they're out there looking for something to eat. And usually, you know, we got a pretty good dose of insecticide there to really knock those things back and keep them from basically going right down the row and not only taking out one plant, but taking out a lot. Again, it kind of depends on what kind of system you're going into, too. You know, of course, if you've got some, you don't want to call it trash, but some cover out there, maybe some manure. If there's a history of grass out there, you know, those insects could be all just waiting there in the surface or right below. And again, first thing out of the ground or that seedling is what they're going to go after, because yeah, they're going to be hungry.
So, yeah, I
so
agree.
We recommend that. Yes.
And, you know, the other thing about it is a lot of people hear the word seed treatment, but they kind of forget that, no, that insecticide actually lasts for a long time in the soil and in the plant. Well, we've been talking to Paul Luchin. He is with Syngenta. Paul, thanks a lot for the time today. Really appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you, guys.
All right, let's go next to, we've got Meredith Van Zambeek with us. He is with Arista. Hey, Meredith, how are things going today?
Doing wonderful, and yourself, Brian?
Great. Yeah, everything's great. So we're talking today about seed treatments in wheat, and we were just discussing insecticide and some of these different fungicides out there. What's the most important thing to you, or is it really just the whole package?
I believe it comes down to the whole package, because we never know what's going to attack us in any given season. So a multi-prong effect, you know, I feel is the basic way to secure a good stand and a healthy stand in any of these early planted crops. So I would like to see a fungicide, insecticide package put on together on that farmer's seed investment.
Yeah, and you know, it's not just one fungicide anymore either. That's the other thing we were just talking a little bit ago, you know, getting maybe three fungicides out there, two or three fungicides. It's certainly helpful versus one to basically get you more disease control and also help prevent any resistance issues that could possibly build. So, like with your company, what are you usually talking about? What kind of fungicide mix?
In cereals, we've got two options. We've got Rancona V RTU, which is Rancona, Iconazole, plus carboxin and metalaxyl. So it's a three fungicide approach. A very high level of metalaxyl in there in order to help with that early season pythium. The nice thing about the carboxin, it gives you a fast jump out of the ground. You see a lot more extension of the coleoptile when you're putting it on wheat. And also, you know, as a result, you can plant a little deeper and still get a very rapid emergence for a uniform, healthy stand.
Okay, so you said a couple options. The Rancona V RTU, what else?
Okay, the other one would be Rancona Crest, which we can put on. It's got just Iconazole and metalaxyl. The other choice, of course, would be Rancona Summit. The Rancona Crest would have both Iconazole, metalaxyl, and imidacloprid at an extremely high rate. So we're talking five times the rate of insecticide is what's in the most competitively ready-to-use products out there in the market.
Okay, so one of the things we've always tried to do over the years at Ag PhD is simplify things, and already today we've talked about a number of different options, and you just gave us three. So how do I pick between these three different Rancona options?
I think it comes down to what are your major factors that you're concerned about on your farm, what has historically been your problem, and then work with a retailer there at Hefties and make a choice that makes the most sense. So, you know, from my standpoint, the Rancona VRTU makes the most sense if you're predominantly looking at fungal problem. And then if you're basically looking at something where you really got to worry about the imidacloprid in there, then definitely go with the Crest.
All right. You mentioned Pythium already as a fungus we have to be concerned about. Is there another one that really stands out to you in wheat, or is Pythium the primary one we see?
We always see potential problems for Rhizoctonia and Fusarium in wheat just because of the nature of the wheat plant. And so we're basically covering our bases, covering the five fungal classes that create pathogenic fungi out there. I know right now, as white as it is across the Dakotas and the snow, the last thing you guys are thinking of is planting in dry and dust. So the Aspergillus penicillium side of things may not be very important this year, but sometimes they can rear their ugly heads and create challenges in the right season as well.
All right, I'm glad you brought up these five fungal classes. That's the whole thing. We're just trying to get a broad spectrum of disease control out there, and a lot of the new fungicides, big advancements versus what we used to have 10, 15 years ago. Well, we've been talking to Meredith Van Zambeek with Arista. Meredith, thanks a lot for the time today. Appreciate you calling in.
Okay, anytime. We appreciate the chance. Have a great day, Brian.
You bet. You too. Thanks. Well, we will continue our discussion with seed treatments in wheat. And if you've got a question for us, just send it to us at radio@agphd.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
No secrets here. We all know, regardless of the markets, balanced crop nutrition pays. Agro Liquid Fertilizers have the research, technology, and products you need to grow a great crop. We also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Agro Liquid can help you maximize your yield potential effectively and economically. Visit iGrowLiquid.com to find a dealer near you.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer Amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean field, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer Amaranth. Take control of your soybean field and get rewarded with Roundup Ready Plus when you choose the proven power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Build with the best. When you choose Morton Buildings for your next farm storage building, you'll experience the Morton advantage at every step, starting before the walls even go up. Since the value of our buildings is in its ability to protect what you have stored inside, we ensure that every component is researched and tested to withstand the elements in all weather conditions. And we back it up with the strongest warranty in the business. Looks better, built stronger, lasts longer. Learn more at MortonBuildings.com.
One year it could be moisture stress, another Pythium or nematodes. So you need your soybeans to rise ready for whatever the season holds. Now one simple decision provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio, fungicides, insecticides, bioenhancers, and an industry-leading nematicide that strikes where nematodes attack. This season, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/riseready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
A pasture should have two things, grass and cattle. No weeds, no brush. That's why Chaparral Herbicide offers the broadest spectrum weed control available. It controls weeds other products can miss, like buckbrush and Canada thistle. And less weeds and brush in your pastures means more forage, so you spend less on feed. Chaparral also suppresses seed heads, lessening the effects of fescue toxicosis, all while providing season-long residual control. Visit noweedsnobrush.com today and learn more about Chaparral.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton studio today, and we're talking about seed treatments in wheat. And we often talk about the difference that seed treatments are making in corn and soybeans and other crops. We wanted to focus on wheat today, and it should be an interesting season if you're putting spring wheat in this upcoming year. And for the guys who put winter wheat in, what a test on some of those treatments to see how they survive the winter of 2018-2019 here. We've got our friend Lee Lubers on. He farms a little bit west of us in South Dakota. In fact, gets considerably less moisture than we normally get. Lee, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good.
You know, when you think about seed treatments, a lot of guys say, oh man, it's got to be, got to have wet conditions before they really pay. How do they work for you in the wet year versus the dry year?
It pays every year. It's a no-brainer. In the wet years, with all the different seedling diseases from a wet environment, you've got to battle. And in the dry years, then you have a higher risk of crown root rot and other situations. So it pays every year. It's we will not plant seed without treatment, without a loaded treatment. We just won't do it.
Now, you say a loaded treatment. I mean, there's a lot of different things people are putting on the seed. What are some of the different kinds of components that you're putting on your seed?
Fungicide, insecticide. Insecticide is a must, we feel, in a seed treatment. We want as many things as we can, and the newer technologies are great. They're easier to handle. They have polymers in them, less dust-off issues that we used to have, 15 years ago. Like everything, technology is just getting better. Same thing in seed treatments. We've got a lot better tools in our toolbox than we had, 20 years ago. And then we also like to complement it with biologicals. We're huge believers in that. They really complement each other.
Yeah, I agree. I've been excited about some of the different things that are starting to be available now on the biological front or the natural product front, both in furrow and on seed. You know, that's another thing that we look at on our farm is just, okay, how's our in furrow going to impact what's on our seed treatment too? When you think about it, this year compared to years in the past, are you trying more things or have you got it kind of dialed in on what you're using and you really like your program you currently have?
We had a program we were pretty satisfied with, and then we got working more with you guys on testing, and then we saw all the promising things out of the Naturals line that you guys carry. And what we saw out of Microcycle on corn was really got our attention, so we have that in trials in our wheat, and we've got dedicated strip trials and have them flagged and marked in the fields. We're really excited about that because we feel with the winter wheat, we have even a lot longer time to colonize on the plant and to make a bigger impact than the corn. So we're very amped up. So yeah, we've definitely been tweaking our system and adding some new components to it on the biological front.
One other thing, I guess, that I was thinking was thinking about talking with you today is just the impact of the New Zealand growers, Eric Watson and Warren Darling, and what they're doing with seeding population and some different management practices. What do you think about that? And is that going to change anything? Are you doing any trial work to try and emulate some of the stuff they're doing?
We already have. Not only did we do some experimenting on some different biologicals and in furrow on seed, we also did some population trials. I mean, those guys are they're not world-class guys. They're world-class record holders. They're just great producers, and I've learned so much from them, and they challenge the way a person thinks. So it's like, hey, let's do some population trials. Let's see what it does in our environment. That's the only way we're going to learn.
Yeah, I agree. We got to try some different things and not be afraid to fail here and there to try and rule out some things. Okay, well, that doesn't work, but here's some other things that do. And, you know, on the seed treatments too, as you mentioned, there's just so many new things coming that it's fun to take a look and see what kind of differences we can have in the field. One last question, Lee. What do the winter crops look like? Did they get a good start last fall? I know it was a challenge getting some of that in.
In our area, we actually turned excessively wet just in time for seeding, of course, and harvest. So our winter wheat went in later. We're not worried about it. That's one thing for winter survival. We know we have a lot better shot with it surviving with all the seed treatments that we're putting on. That really amplifies the hardiness for it to hold in these tough conditions, because right now, we're currently the coldest we've ever been for the beginning of March, and I'm not worried at all.
Well, that's good. Being able to sleep at night is probably one of the most important things. And feeling secure, that's what I like about the seed treatments too. I know we talk about a lot on our farm. It's one of those things that we just can't leave out, because otherwise we're going to be nervous until that crop is up and growing and in good shape. So I really appreciate the feedback, Lee, today. Thanks for joining us, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
You bet. We'll see ya.
I agree with Lee, Brian. We've always got to be experimenting and trying some new things on the farm. I know you'd mentioned that earlier, that's one of the keys. How do you know something's going to work or not until you get it out there and try it? Getting lots of questions here. I want to jump back into some mailbag questions. This one's from Kyle, and he's trying something different on soybeans. He said, I'm just wondering, what do you guys think about using a fertilizer like 3-18-18 in furrow with my soybeans?
We have done that in the past. I mean, 3-18-18 is not bad. There are other low salt products that I would rather use. But anyway, the point is, either way, you need to keep the rate really low. About 1 gallon is about all I'd use. And then I would blend that off with 2 to 4 gallons of water just so you have a better spread, more consistent spread in there, and you kind of safen that for the beans. Also, you might want to consider taking a look at some very low rates of micronutrient products. That's something we are doing on our farm. But I don't have any big issue using real small rates of fertilizer with the beans. But if I'm going to do very much, it's got to be 2x2 rather than in furrow.
All right, thanks for the question. Got another one here. This one's from Adam, and he said, in light of Neil Kinsey's talks about micronutrients, I'm trying to get my micronutrient levels up to where Neil would recommend we should be. We're going to add some manganese sulfate, copper sulfate, and iron sulfate to two of our fields this year, one corn and one soybeans. We're wondering, how much of these can we put on in a single year in heat of each crop or ahead of each crop before it becomes damaging?
You'd have to put on an awful lot. Now, it depends on how you're going to put it on more than anything. So if we're just going to broadcast and say it again, Darren, it was the manganese, copper, and what was the other
one? Iron.
Oh, iron, yeah. So I'm really not too worried about any of those if you go out and broadcast them. I seriously doubt you're going to have a problem. If you're concerned about it, though, then what I would suggest is just try a big rate or the rate you wanted to use on a few acres and do a lower rate on the majority of the acres. But no, we've done great big rates of all three of those things, had no issue. Usually we don't see problems in heavier soils. If you've got really light soil, and especially if you wanted a band, well, then we may have to step that back a little bit. But if you're broadcasting on heavy soils, not too much worry.
All right, thanks for the question, Adam. We really appreciate that. Brian, look at the soil results here, and I've got a question from Kevin from Western Illinois. He said, I was looking at some different ideas on soybean seed inoculations, and I found a seed company that had done some trial work, and I did a double take when I saw what their yield levels were, which were exceptionally high, like
80 bushels.
Yeah, over 80 bushels, but the soil test values were really low. Now, I was curious what your thought was about that low a soil test level and that high a yield level. Now, here's the thing, Kevin. You can apply a whole bunch of fertilizer, too, when you start with not much out there to try to boost things for this year. And available fertility versus fertility that's already in the field, I mean, there's a lot of question about will you get that first year availability on what you apply. Depends on rainfall. Depends on the types of fertilizer that you're putting out there.
Yeah, and also we have to look at what are the testing methods, you know, how was it tested, how deep was it tested. I don't have any of that information, and it doesn't say what they did for fertility. That's probably the big thing that's missing off this. The other thing that when I read his email, Darren, is I assumed he was questioning how low the return on investment was on this one study in one location, 1 year for inoculant. Usually we see inoculant paying off very well on average over time. You don't have to have much yield gain for it to pay off when it costs as little as it does.
All right, thanks for that question. We'll get back to more of the Ag PhD mailbag questions after this.
If you're a rancher who's obsessed with keeping your pastures clear, turn to Grazon Next Herbicide. It offers superior broadleaf weed control, so instead of thinking about weeds, you can think about the money you'll save growing more grass and buying less feed. Used early in the season, Grazon Next also provides residual activity that controls newly emerged weed seedlings, giving you season-long control. Start enhancing your land while you protect it. Visit leavetheweedstoss.com to learn more about Grazon Next. Always read and follow label directions.
In farming, there's a lot of variables out of our control. Don't let fertility be one of them. Let the experts at AgroLiquid move you closer to your bullseye. It's true. AgroLiquid fertilizers are formulated to keep nutrients available to your crop, and they have unmatched compatibility with other nutrients and crop protection products, which makes application more efficient than ever. But we also have the best people in the field, ready to talk about your operation, your goals. Go to agroliquid.com to move you closer to your target.
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike incentive programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. You decide what's best for your operation, from pre-plant to harvest. Your retailer and FMC take care of the rest. It's really that simple. The exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing of the FMC Freedom Pass program make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. That's what we mean when we say we give you more freedom in the field. You'll experience more control and confidence, too. Generics and imitators can't promise that. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutec's EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutec's EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutec's EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag time, taking your calls and questions here. I got a bunch of emails we're trying to get through right now. I got one from Ryan in Kansas. And here you go, Brian. As you know, we didn't get our fall work done, including any fall herbicide application. So I'm looking at doing an early pre-plant application on soybean ground as soon as I can. I was planning to use our fall blend, which is dicamba and metribuzin, but I was told by somebody they like Authority MTZ with sulfentrazone and metribuzin in the spring instead. These are different mode combinations and provide different amounts of metribuzin, but cost roughly the same. If you had to pick between either dicamba and metribuzin or sulfentrazone and metribuzin for the spring application, which would you prefer and why? Just an FYI, we really like our prefix plus glyphosate post-plant.
Okay, so were these Xtend beans? Did I miss that?
Doesn't say what right. The trait is here.
Right,
I'm assuming if we've got dicamba in the mix that it might be, but if you're going to do that in the spring, that really changes the game. If you're doing it in the fall even, how safe is that in the fall ahead of soybeans?
If they're not Xtend beans, it's not super safe, but that's in our region. So you said Kansas?
Kansas.
Right. So Kansas is a whole different deal. If I'm going to go out there in, let's say, October, right after harvest, I've got all kinds of months where that herbicide's going to get broken down. If I go out in October with dicamba on my farm, I have no months that it's going to break down by the time I want to plant my beans some years. Where I'm going with this is we get that fall freeze up, and then in the spring it thaws, and I mean we're out there like almost that day planting beans, so there's just no time for the dicamba to break down, and then I worry that it's going to actually hurt the beans. For him, I'm not concerned, but spring I am concerned. So yeah, there's no using the dicamba in the spring unless it's Xtend beans. So let's just assume that we've got Xtend beans here. What would I do? If I need burn down, yeah, I love dicamba, but by the same token, dicamba isn't going to give me the residual that Authority is, so I'm absolutely using the Authority MTZ, no question about it. Now, if I feel like I need additional burn down, I'm going to throw the dicamba in with it, so I'm going to spend more money if I need that, but there's no way I'm going to plant beans without Authority or Valor on my farm. No way, no how, not a chance.
All right, thanks for the question. We appreciate that, and good luck this spring. A lot of guys in the same boat. Didn't get things worked up in the fall. Got one from Ron here. He said, a few years ago, I saw an article in an ag magazine where a field was actually the remnants of a section of the Missouri River after it changed course.
Yep.
They actually found a wrecked riverboat buried in the field, which apparently had run upon submerged logs. Yep. I'm wondering.
Yep, that was common.
Have you ever worked with anybody with this type of soil, and what would it be like?
We farm some of that type of soil because we do farm along the river, and the river's changed course.
Not the Missouri River, but a different river.
Yeah, but a different river, but this happens on all rivers. So the river just starts winding, and then it changes course over time, and that's the way it goes. And then that fills in a lot of times with silt. So, I guess it's silt, and you just test it and see what it's like. So you'd want to test those points separately, and you might be down to sub-acre grids, just a few of them. I'm not saying lots, but just a few, or just go right to one of those spots and test it and see what you've got. Chances are it's going to be fairly high in organic matter and nutrient content, but I don't know. Maybe if you haven't applied much fertilizer, the nutrient content now may be low, but it's just more silt than anything, maybe a little bit less clay.
All right, thanks for the question. We appreciate that. Get one from Wes here, and actually Wes has got a few questions. His first one, he said, as I get down to the short rows of making my seed selections, I was struck but with a question as I compared different companies' performance ratings. Now, it appears the ratings are based on the company standards and their measurement systems, because one brand shows written stock strength ratings at a 4 or 5, and a different brand is showing an 8 or 9. How do I sort through these things?
Darren, you're the seed expert. What do you think?
Well, it is a little bit of a challenge, and you're right. Everybody's got a different rating system. So I guess finding out, okay, what does a 4 mean for your company, or what does an 8 or a 9 mean for your company? And the other thing that I look at, too, is if every rating in the whole book is either an 8 or a 9, and 9 is supposed to be the best, it's like, I don't know if I really got much. Now, if you see that the company's got a rating system of 1 to 9, and there's ratings, you know, all the way from 3 or 4 up to 9, okay, now they're really making some comparisons out there. But I think one of the big things as you take new hybrids on, and we're planting some new hybrids on a portion of our farm every year, take a look at them yourself. Get out in the summer and see, okay, hey, I've been planting company X, and their ratings of an 8 to me mean I'm going to have a little bit of lodging out there, or, hey, it's going to be absolutely perfect. And just find out for yourself, how do I feel about their rating system, you know, as you bring in a new company. So I wouldn't recommend, oh, I'm going to plant brand X this year and brand Z next year 100% of my acres. I'd say, all right, I'm planting brand X. If I want to look at company Z, I'll start small and say, oh, okay, I'll try a few of their hybrids on a small amount of acres, and I'll see what their rating scale is like. Because, yeah, they're all different, and it's tough. And you can't just say, oh, well, here's a 1 to 10, and here's a 1 to 5 scale. I'll just multiply the 1 to 5 times 2. That doesn't necessarily play out. Wes had another question. He said, I read an article or two about splitting the planter with two varieties of corn with slightly different silking and pollination dates to spread that pollination out as a defensive strategy against an untimely hot spell during pollination. You know, Brian, we've seen this kind of stuff. Like, for example, even on our own farm, if we get to the end of the year and we've got a little bit of a few different varieties, sometimes we just mix that all together in the planter. And it's interesting because we do get a really wide pollination window. And some years that actually turns out better for us. Some years having a bunch of different stuff out there isn't the best thing in the world. But I have nothing against that, Wes. Do you see any downfall in splitting the planter, do some split trials in fields?
No, we've done that for years and years. Yeah. Why would I not want to do that? Now, the only thing that I'm going to say, though, is this. If I've got a tall hybrid versus a short hybrid, then the tall hybrid is going to shade out the short hybrid, and it's very likely that your tall hybrid is going to win in terms of yield.
Especially if you have, say, two rows of one, two rows of the
exactly.
other.
Exactly.
Now, if you've got 24 rows of one and 24 rows of the other, I don't think it's going to make a big deal.
It's not going to make a big difference, but those outside two rows are going to be affected. So it is going to have a little impact. So if I'm doing a yield comparison, I'd like to cut the middles out of each one, and then I've got a much truer test than if I take the edges.
All right. Thanks for the questions, Wes. Got one from Jeff. He said, I farm in South Central Minnesota. It's my first year trying strip till, and I got a question for you guys. I put down P and K and some of my nitrogen in the fall 6 to 8 inches deep. How would you guys put out the rest of your nitrogen? My soils are pretty variable, anything from sandier to heavy black dirt. It's only my second year running this particular farm, and I'm not really familiar with it yet, and I just need to pull some more soil samples out there to really dial down this variability. My plan is to spray 20 gallons of 28% with my pre, and another 20 gallons of 28% side dress at about V6 with a Coulter rig, so my total N would be 180 pounds. Does that sound good, or is there anything else you'd recommend for a 220 bushel yield goal?
What was his organic matter?
He doesn't say. Right. So, okay, first of all, Jeff, I'd get some soil samples pulled so you know where your organic matter levels are. And can you explain that, Brian, what you're looking for there?
Yeah, so here's the thing. When people get nitrogen recommendations, they usually, their fertilizer dealer will say, did you have soybeans there last year? Okay, if you did, we'll give you a nitrogen credit. I hate to break this to you, but that is fictional. There's no such thing. Doesn't exist. You've been lied to for years. So what we want to do is, number one, we want to test the soil, see how much nitrogen is there. Number two, we want to look at how much do I need in total for my crop. So what'd you say, 220 bushel corn? So roughly you're going to need 250 pounds in total. The other thing that we got to look at is your soil's organic matter. If you have good conditions to break that down, so in other words, if you have a good year of heat and you have decent soil conditions, good drainage, and not a crazy amount of compaction or anything like that, neutral pH. A lot of times in the United States, in the Midwest, we're talking 20 to 30 pounds of nitrogen for every 1% of organic matter. So if I had 5% organic matter, that'd be 100 to 150 pounds I could get out of that soil for free. That's a big deal. So we really need to see the soil test before we can give you a more fine-tuned recommendation.
Get some more of your questions right after this. Stay tuned.
Every farmer knows that in order to be profitable, you need to maximize the return on your crop input investments. Hi, I'm Scott Harms, an agri-risk specialist with Grain PhD. Without an effective and flexible strategy, your grain marketing plan gets stuck in the mud. With Grain PhD, you get the clarity and guidance a solid marketing plan needs. Our free GrainBridge software simplifies your cost-profit analysis, and our risk specialists are here to help you develop your plan. Sign up today at grainphd.com.
Increase your productivity with Hypro's Dual React Control System. The dual nozzle body design allows you to drive at the speed you want while maintaining the rate and droplet size you need. Hypro, helping you spray better.
Interested in strip tillage? You should know about the Soil Warrior from ETS. With one-pass efficiency, optimized nutrient placement, and reduced production costs for higher profitability, the Soil Warrior brings the future to your farm. Visit SoilWarrior.com to learn more.
Hey, Bill, any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2save3.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy 2 Save 3 are trademarks owned by Amvac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Your grain bin fans can cost you a lot. High electric bills from running when conditions are not ideal, shrinkage from overdried grain, and spoiled grain all take money out of your pocket. With the Steps GMS app temperature humidity switch, get your bin fans to start making you money. Only run vans when the conditions are right. Eliminate shrink and spoilage in your bins. Deliver grain in top condition at market moisture. When every dollar counts, you need Steps GMS. Contact us today at stepsgms.com.
You know what's convenient? If you're a soybean grower, what's convenient is Zidua Pro Herbicide. That's because you get fast and complete burn down together with up to 2 weeks longer residual than other herbicides and three sites of action for broad spectrum weed control, plus built-in resistance management. All in one convenient jug. And that turns out to be very inconvenient for pigweed, water hemp, and mare's tail. Contact your local BASF rep today. Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
With the success of the Case IH Steiger Quad Track and Magnum Road Track tractors, it's no secret why Case IH is the leader of the track. So it wasn't surprising when the competition started imitating us. Because Case IH offered the first five-axle design to give you more power to the ground with less burming and compaction, all to help you be more productive. Still, we're flattered. In fact, if we weren't already red, we'd be blushing. To learn more, visit caseih.com/tracks.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here, along with my brother Darren. We are broadcasting today from the Morton studio, right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag. So right before the break, we had a nitrogen question. And there are a couple other things that I want to tell you for anyone who's going to be putting nitrogen on this year. First of all, one of the most important things you need to look at on your soil test is, what's your cation exchange capacity? That's going to give you a general idea of how much nitrogen your soil can hold at any one time. What we usually say is take 10 times your CEC. Now, this is not going to give you a perfectly exact amount because let me phrase it like this. Let's say I have no rain in the next 2 months. Okay, if I have no rain in the next 2 months, how am I going to lose my nitrogen if I've put it into the soil? Well, I'm not going to lose it. Okay, on the other hand, let's say I get 40 inches of rain in the next 2 weeks, which would be completely unheard of, but let's say it happens. Okay, well, then I'm not going to hold as much nitrogen as I think I could. But nevertheless, typically we are talking 10 times your CEC. So if I had, so like that farmer was talking about putting 180 pounds on. All right, that's fine if you've got an 18 CEC or greater. But let's also keep in mind there's probably some nitrogen already sitting in the soil, and you don't want to lose that either. So if I'm starting with, and a lot of fields coming out of last year on our farm, we've got 10 to 20 pounds out there. We don't have much. So if, let's say, I had a 20 CEC, 20 times 10 is 200. I can hold about 200 pounds at any one time. If I've got 10 or 20 out there already, I could throw another 180 out there, and I'm probably okay. It's not a real big deal. I'd probably cut it a little more than that just to be on the safe side, but that's the first thing that I'm thinking about. Then I want to take a look at, when am I going to need my nitrogen? If it's not for quite a while, it's probably a good idea to put out some nitrogen in the beginning and then wait a while, then do another soil test. Or, you know, even a few soil tests on your farm. We'll call them pre-side dress nitrate tests for corn. And if I'm going to do that, then I've got a much better idea of, hey, you know what? If I look at the charts and I say, all right, I'm already at a certain growth stage. I know that after that I use roughly, call it 70% of my needs. I can fine tune my nitrogen recommendation a little bit more. Now, there are some other methods to doing that. I know Climate, Farmer's Edge, and all these data companies have their methods, and they really actually are fairly close too. But I'm just trying to say, don't way overdo it in the beginning, especially if you have lighter soil and if you have quite a bit of rainfall. But look at your cation exchange capacity number.
All right, thanks for the question. I got another nitrogen-related strip-till question. This one comes from Richard. He says, if I'm using an ESN or urea as a nitrogen source, approximately how many pounds of N could I mix in the strip 6 to 8 inches deep and then plant corn right behind that machine this spring?
You can actually put on a lot. We've done really big rates. But here again, I want to look at my cation exchange capacity. If it's light soil, I can only hold so much. If I put it in a concentrated band, now I've got a greater chance to lose it if I way overdo it also, because it's all together there. What he's worried about, I'm certain, is, am I going to hurt my corn? I'm concerned about that if you get to some crazy rate. So if it's me, you know, to go above about 100 pounds, 120 pounds, that to me is about my limit personally. But that's in my soil. If you've got a really light sandy soil, then you might want to cut that back. If you've got a super heavy soil, you could probably increase that. But here's one of the things I want you to think about. If I've put stuff out in a strip till, I have basically eliminated compaction down to that depth. So my roots are going to get down there quickly. I mean, it could very well be that within 2 to 3 weeks after you've planted your corn, you already have roots getting down there. And if you've got some tiny little roots, it's possible that you could burn those roots off. So what I would suggest is be really conservative when you first start doing this and do some digging. So you've got to dig down to the depth where you put that nitrogen out. And once you get, let's call it a month after planting, dig down there and start examining those roots and see if you have burned some off. And then you can run some of your own trials too by doing this. So let's say that on your farm you go, you know what, I will try that, let's call it 100 pounds. But I want to see at what point I really hurt the crop. So I might try some at 150, 200 pounds, 250, 300, and just see what kind of damage you do just in very small little strips, something like that. So, you know, when people have to ask these questions about how much is too much, that usually means you're uncomfortable with it. What I always find is if I'm uncomfortable with something, I'm just going to keep shaving that back. You can always put more nitrogen on later. That's no problem. But you can't recover from an injured crop. So be really careful and really conservative when you first start doing this.
All right, thanks for the question. Got one from Shadow here. He says, I'm raising corn, cassava, and I have a longan tree farm. Every day I'm learning and gaining more knowledge from Michelle.
Wait, a what tree?
L-O-N-G-A-N. It's a tree fruit. Every day I'm learning, gaining new knowledge to produce good yields with all my crops, watching your show. Hey, thanks a lot, Shadow. Really appreciate that comment. Yeah, I know sometimes when you think, oh, I'm not raising corn and soybeans, and that's the crops they probably talk about more on the show. I get it that you may think, it might not be a lot in there for me, but I'm glad you're getting some value out of it. When we talk about a lot of these weeds, they're weeds that are found worldwide, and we talk about a lot of the diseases and fertility questions. They relate to just about anything.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we just spent 10 minutes talking about nitrogen, cation exchange capacity. I mean, those things apply to every single crop there is in the world. And we talk a lot about drainage here. Like Darren said, diseases, insects, there are so many things that are going to apply to more than just corn and soybeans. Yeah, the reason why we talk about corn and soybeans so much is in the United States, those are the top two acreage crops. And then number three is wheat. So those are the three crops we spend most of our time on just because the most people, the most acres are affected by those crops.
All right, got one from John here, and ooh, this one could be a landmine for you, Brian. He said, I saw Enlist soybeans have come off and are ready to be used now. Do you know if MCPA will harm them? I'm looking at that chemical because it lasts longer than other 2,4-Ds and may have a residual effect.
No. MCP, in our experience, now this is just our experience, okay? So I can just tell you as an agronomist, it doesn't last any longer. So that's the first thing. The second thing is there's no way that MCP is going to be labeled for burn down or for use in crop in Enlist. Three, MCP, we get terribly worried about volatility and drift. We don't have near the level of those concerns with the new Freelex that you could use in non-crop areas or Enlist One that you could use over the top of Enlist crops. And so my summary here is you should just forget about the MCP thing. It's not going to be labeled, and it's not going to give you any more residual than the new 2,4-D.
Yeah, the new Enlist, the drift reduction is so substantial. You really need to try it out. Even if you're not using Enlist crops, try some Freelex out on non-crop acres, like maybe in ditches or grass or something like that, just to see how that product works and how little movement we're seeing other than drift from wind. It's really staying put. It looks really nice. Thanks for the question. Come on from Bradley. He said, I got a follow-up question to an earlier fertility question. I'm just wondering if you could give me the formula figuring out how much potash to add to raise my base saturation. I'm in Wisconsin. I've got an 18 CEC, a 6.5 pH, but my K is low. It's at 1.5% base saturation. I'm running 50 to 70 parts per million of potassium, and I want to get to a 4% base saturation.
Okay, so just running simple math. So what I'm going to do here is, let's just say, for example, it's 50 parts per million, and I want to get to 4% base saturation. So all I'm going to do is I'm going to take that 50, I'm going to multiply it times 4, I'm going to divide it by 1.5. I'm shooting for a minimum of 133 parts per million. So that's all you have to get to. And when we start talking about the difference then, so 133 minus 50, that difference, what you're talking there, is about 83 parts per million. So if I need 83 parts per million, how do you convert parts per million to pounds per acre? You multiply times 2. So if I multiply the 83 times 2, that gives me 166. So I've got to get 166 pounds of actual K. Well, potash is 50%. K, yes, I realize people say, 60, but that's K2O. For K, it's 50%. So if I take that number simply by 2, 166 times 2, I've got to have roughly 332 pounds of potash, and that should do it.
I think about it, too. It generally takes a few years for all that potash to show up on your soil test, so be patient with that. And the other thing is, don't forget about crop removal. You also need to add that this year as well, or you aren't going to get to your 4%. Thanks for all the questions today, and thanks for listening. And be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.